You're listening to a Weeby Geeks Network podcast.
Welcome to another issue of Mighty Marvel Geeks. I am Mike, your host, and thank you for joining us here on Sorcerer Radio as we do this every Saturday night at 8 p.m. right after Rebel Force Radio. Special treat for you guys this week. We're going to have the author or writer of probably the hottest comic book in your brick and mortar stores. We're going to have Jim Zub here to talk about Figment and other projects he's doing with Marvel. So we have on the line with us Jim Zub. Most people know him from Wayward with Image Comics, but we also know him as having, like I said earlier, one of the hottest books on the shelves now with Disney Kingdom's Figment. How are you doing today, Jim?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Doing excellent.
I want to thank Ken Marcy and Ryan Hurley for some of these questions being asked today.
So, I guess to start, how did you get involved with Marvel on the Figment project?
That was it's really kind of a unique thing. For a lot of the writing work, comic work that I've done, it tends to be built up over kind of relationships, or, you know, you meet someone at a convention or you hand them your work, or someone else, you know, sort of recommends you for a particular project. In this case, Bill Roseman, the editor at Marvel, really contacted me out of the blue. So he dropped me a line back in December and asked me if I might be interested in working on this. They've been developing a bunch of the attractions into storylines, developing right. Characters, sort of expanding the mythology of a bunch of the attractions. And they thought my name came up in conversation, and they thought I might be a good fit for Journey into Imagination. So it really was kind of an out of the blue sort of an approach, which is pretty unusual.
Okay. Now, I'm going to ask before we go further, have you had a chance to ride any of the versions of the ride before?
Yeah, absolutely. I've only been to Disney World actually once. Back when I was 12 years old, I went with my family. We went on a road trip over the summer, and we went to Disney World. And so I went on the original version of okay. Journey into Imagination. So it's funny. It's one of the attractions that actually stuck with me when I was a kid. I remembered it quite distinctively. So, you know, everything's sort of come full circle. It's really neat.
Okay. Now, for, I guess, our listeners who don't know, Journey into Imagination is a ride that's had various incarnations at Epcot. And, of course, the main character, Figment, was the first character created by Disney that was never featured in a film. So it was the first character created for a theme park. So I guess with your writing, what are the differences and similarities in writing your own characters as to taking on a character like Figment in Dreamfinder?
Well, you know, any kind of, for my own stuff, so, you know, I've got creator-owned projects I'm doing for Image Comics, or done a lot of other commercial writing over the years, and there are similarities and differences. You know, with any project, you want to put some of yourself into it, and you definitely want to be excited and passionate about the characters that you're writing. But on the other hand, when you're writing characters that aren't yours, you know, in this case, Figment and Dreamfinder and the whole Journey into Imagination experience is really built around someone else's property, you want to make sure that you sort of do your due diligence. So I did a lot of research on the ride. I talked to the Imagineer pretty extensively and really went back and forth with them to make sure that I understood what they wanted, as well as what I felt, you know, I could bring to the mix. And so trying to balance those factors out. I really do enjoy doing both types of writing. I like doing creator-owned projects that are, you know, my own, and I like doing commercial stuff because it challenges you in ways that you wouldn't necessarily, you know, challenge yourself. You get to work on things that you wouldn't have ever thought of and try things out and really expand your sort of repertoire. And so although, you know, Journey to Imagination and the Dreamfinder Figment stuff fits in with my kind of wheelhouse, it's still pretty, you know, there's still enough differences there that it challenged me in some really cool ways to try and hit the mark and make it sound right and make it feel right and really bring out those qualities that, you know, are exemplified in the ride.
Right. Now, you're saying during, you were doing a lot of research. During any of that time, did you get a chance to talk with Rob Schneider or any of the other Dreamfinders to attain, you know, like what they put into the character or other details? Or is this almost like a total reboot of the character?
It's not a reboot. It's more of an origin story of Dreamfinder. So although the communication on the Disney side went through the Disney Imagineering team, and they actually sent a lot of the stuff along to the Dream Pipeline through. It wasn't like a phone conversation, but there were a lot of emails back and forth, and, you know, I was really happy when we got the positive feedback from both the Imagineering crew and from, you know, Ron and from just all the whole team over there, really. It was really cool, and it was something where initially I sort of put out three different, quite different ideas about where we could take the story. Some of them were a little bit more kind of fantasy magical, some of them were a little bit more historical, you know, sort of driven, some of them were kind of just different takes on the property, and the one that they keyed into was this idea of delving into how the Dreamfinder came to be and sort of his origin story and okay. The first time Figment. And so it was something where I put out three kind of broad ideas and I could have worked with any of them, and then they zeroed in on the one that they felt was most in line with what was already there and what, you know, exemplified stuff from the attraction. So it was nice to build from there and get that feedback from Imagineers, from Ron, from all the people involved with the original attraction.
Okay. Now, with these, were you allowed to give them their own voice since they've never been in comics before, or were you, again, still kind of dictated by guidelines?
Well, it's interesting. I would always do the first draft of each script, sort of, you know, just scripting it out the way that I felt it should work. And then when we would get the feedback from the Imagineers, they would, every so often they would say, you know, I think we could say this line a little bit differently, or this, these are actual lines from the attraction with a particular tone or a particular kind of vocabulary, and we can incorporate some of that. Not that we're just parroting lines from the ride, but that, you know, there's specific ways that the characters speak. And right. I, you know, having that kind of feedback is fantastic. Particularly with Figment, where you want to try and balance out the character's sort of childlike qualities and innocence. But, you know, Figment isn't unintelligent, and Figment is not just a kid. There's more to him than that. He's this pure, boisterous, you know, whimsical sense of imagination. And so bringing that out in the voices of the character, you know, it meant a lot to me to sort of get that right. And that's one of the reasons why you want, you know, that kind of feedback. So most of the time, most of the stuff I was writing, you know, was they liked it, and then it was something where if we can get those small edits in there or just adjustments. And I think as we went along also, got a lot easier. You know, with any new project, you come into it. The first time you work on it, you're figuring out those elements. And by the time we got to the last issue, scripting it out, you know, it was that much easier because I think we were all pretty comfortable with how the process was going.
So you were kind of stuck with Billy Barty's voice in your head the whole time when writing all the lines for Figment.
Yeah, I don't consider that a bad thing. It's all good. Yeah, I don't mind that. It's sort of funny, right? Like, I also write the Samurai Jack comic series for Cartoon Network and IDW, and so that's all about getting those character voices right as well. And with any of these types of projects, you want to be loyal to the source material. So, you know, you just sort of, yeah, you do kind of funnel it through your head, or you sort of read the lines back to yourself as right. you're working, which can be a little bit, I'm sure, if anyone was in my office while I'm finalizing.
It was always amazing to know that one of the best movie villains was the voice of probably one of my most loved Disney characters.
That's what's so great about these voice actors is that their range is so incredibly, you know, wide. I did a project just over a year ago with Rob Paulson, and, you know, he's done dozens and dozens of voices, animation tracks over the years, and his range was unbelievable. He could just hit the mark right from the get-go. whether it was like a song number or, you know, comedy or even something serious, he was just there. He was knocking it out.
Right. Now, canonically speaking, can we assume that your version of Dreamfinder is what we see or has seen in the attraction, or just an older, fluffier, or is this a totally new incarnation of the character?
Everything that we've done, and my intent is that it is in canon with the attraction, that this origin story leads into essentially what you have in the original Journey into Imagination. Now, I'm not an official rep from Disney, so, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it's not for me to say, but as far as I've been told and as far as our plan was, that's the way I've gone into it. That everything is, you know, in continuity, if you want to put it that way. That all the stuff that comes in the attraction comes from somewhere, and that we've sort of built into it and built up to it. And so that was my intent all along. The reason why you see Dreamfinder in the comic and he looks younger and thinner is because he is younger and thinner. It's the origin story of that character.
Okay. Now, so the book is based more on the original incarnation of the ride, not what's currently out.
Right, that's correct.
Okay. Do we expect to see the Dreamfinder machine in upcoming issues?
Keep reading. That's all I can say.
What other aspects of the original attraction are going to make their way into the book, or is that still too much of a spoiler?
Yeah, some of it's just visual cues. I mean, one of the difficult things about generating a new story is, you know, the attraction is wonderful, and it's a great visual and auditory experience, but there's really no plot line or kind of conflict really at play. It's just a series of sort of events that are happening in front of your eyes, and they're really amazing in that original attraction.
Right.
Part of my job was to come up with a plot line, so how, you know, Dreamfinder goes, you know, develops as a character, or what sort of challenges he and Figment have to overcome. And that's a very different kind of a process, storytelling-wise. And so we had to generate quite a bit of material, but we were always looking at the attraction for our source. You know, what visual cues or what sort of design elements can we take from the original attraction, or what sort of, you know, interesting and imaginative things that show up in the attraction can we have influence the environment where they're going to be going in the story. So it all sort of echoes those ideas from the original, you know, Journey into Imagination attraction, but it is, you know, a very different, more kind of, you know, plot-driven storyline, so that, you know, Dreamfinder is going along on this particular, you know, without trying to sound corny, you know, journey.
Right.
What's he up against, and what needs to be, you know, what's he got to overcome in order to discover and understand, first of all, him, his own self, and his sort of creative ideals.
Now, what were your expectations of how the audience might receive this as opposed to what really happened with, obviously, first issue going into a second printing almost right away, and then the second issue, before it was even released, printing was ordered?
I mean, you always want people, everyone, if you're any kind of, you know, creative person, you want people to respond strongly to your work. You want people to be excited about it. So you try and go into this stuff as balanced as you can. You try to be positive and put your best foot forward, but you really don't know. And, it, you know, this is the majority of the comic book audience that's going to the comic shops week after week. There's a lot of superhero fans. There's a lot of, you know, kind of genre fans. And the audience is actually older than, you know, it used to back when I was collecting comics as a kid. And so you don't know for sure what that response is going to be. And so I think we were all really pleasantly surprised when the reviews came in very strong, and the first issue sold out really quickly, and there was just a general response that this is a fun, bombastic kind of adventure comic, which is exactly what we were going for.
Right.
So, yeah, it was kind of best case scenario in that regard. You want new readers to be able to pick it up and enjoy it and understand it, and you want longtime fans to feel like we're tapping into something very core about that original idea.
Right. Yeah, my wife's not a big comic book reader. My daughter is becoming one. But when she saw Figment was coming out, she's like, when you get it, I need to read it. I'm like, when I pick it up, I'm getting two copies. That way you can do whatever you want to yours, and I can do whatever I want to mine.
Well, what's nice about it is I a lot of that, the first week of release in particular, I got a lot of tweets and messages from people saying that, this was the first time they'd ever bought a comic book, or this is the first time they'd ever been to a comic book shop, or this was the first time they've ever set up a subscription at a comic book shop for a comic. And I mean, that's the kind of outreach and, I mean, you want to have in this industry. And that's the kind of positive sort of thing you can have happen when you're tapping into something different, you know, than sort of the typical comic book audience. And I think Marvel was really surprised at that element of it as well, that you had people who previously would never have even, you know, darkened the door of a comic book shop, and now were actively keeping them out or were calling around to make sure that they got a copy.
Right. I know my local store here in Kissimmee, Florida, they got a sign underneath saying one copy per person.
Well, you know, I think Florida had a disproportionate rush on the book just because of the Disney World, you know, proximity there. I got a lot of these from Florida readers, and that was really touching. You know, I don't know if it's going to work out just yet, but I'm hoping that I'll be able to do a signing in Florida in the fall, and that way we can really, you know, sort of push that even further as we're wrapping up the meeting.
Well, since you bring that up, where would the signing possibly be?
I don't want to say anything until we nail down details. So
okay.
I'm just throwing it out as a broader, hopeful thing that's been discussed sort of back and forth.
Okay. So hopefully Central Florida area. That way we get a chance to meet up as well. And I can bring my issues, to get signed. If you haven't read this book, it's an amazing book. And luckily, I got a chance to see some of the previews when released by Marvel through their press releases. And the first cover with Dreamfinder and Figment is my lock screen on my iPhone. It's just brilliant artwork. It really brings your words to life.
John Taylor Christopher is doing the covers, and he's a stellar talent. And so with each issue, because the cover art has to be done ahead of time, he was really having to envision stuff even before, you know, Philippe Andrade had a chance to draw it. And so John was sort of the first guy in there coming up with some of those designs and figuring out how this was going to look as we moved into it. And so that was, you know, it's such a weird feeling collaborating with a team like this, where you're coming up with ideas out of your head and you're sort of fusing it with, you know, the source material, and then having other people illustrating that and bringing some of themselves into it as well. And then it all come together so strongly, and that the vision is so, you know, tight across the board.
Right.
It really is. It's been an amazing experience.
Now, was there anything that you wanted to put in the book that Disney just came straight out and said, no, you can't do that?
No, you know, that was one of the weirdest things. Was I've done quite a bit of commercial, you know, work before. I've done some artwork for commercial clients when I was working at the Udon Studio. And over the years, you work with all sorts of different entertainment companies and toy companies and movie companies and video game companies. And you get a sense of sort of where the boundaries are. And so I went into this with a pretty clear idea of what would why right from the get-go. That said, the only thing that we cut was something that I ended up cutting. We had another sort of character, kind of a creature that was supposed to be in the realms of imagination, that was part of the original pitch, and it just ended up getting a little bit too crushed. There was too much material in the story and not quite enough to fit it all. And so we had to kind of make a decision. And I was the first one to say, as much as I like this idea, I think that it's sort of extraneous to everything else we're doing, so I'm going to cut it. And that was a weird feat. It was like, oh, I'd come up with this thing and I thought it would work well. And in the pitch stage, it seemed very clear. But once you got into the nitty-gritty, you realize we need a little bit more time to explain this, or we need a little bit more time to focus on other elements, and something's got to go. And that's just sort of part of the creative process.
Okay, so like the creature we see in issue 2.
Right.
Was that something that was supposed to be part of the storyline for the original attraction, or was that something you were allowed to bring into it?
That was something I brought into it, because there's not, in the actual attraction, there's pretty much just Dreamfinder and Figment, and so we're like, you know, these characters need other characters to play off of, so we need to have people that they meet, you know, in the other places they go, or we need to have antagonists that they're going to be battling against. So, you know, coming up with stuff that felt like it hit, the feeling of the original attraction, but also allowed us to broaden the cast, which is a weird feeling because you're creating new Disney characters, which is, you know, something I never really imagined will happen in your own life, but it was a really cool process. The same sort of thing happens with the antagonists, or even the academy where Blair, our inventor, works. It was something where I wanted to have, I didn't want to have the, there's the new version of the school, I think it's called the Imagination Academy or whatever, in the new version of the attraction.
Right.
I didn't want that exact thing, but I wanted to have that academic backdrop. And so we created this place called the Academy Lucida. And so it's this place where, you know, inventions are happening in London at the turn of the century. So we have some sort of callbacks and a feeling of the attraction, but it's not the exact thing that's in the current version. So stuff like that where you're trying to take these bigger ideas and sort of streamline them into something that's going to work for a story.
Okay. Well, we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Mighty Marvel Geeks with special guest Jim Zub, writer of Figment, and we'll be right back.
Welcome to the new sound of Sorcerer Radio, version 3.0.
Sorcerer Radio presents the Sorcerer Radio app, version 3.0. We have the technology. Check out our brand new Sorcerer Radio app for all iDevices as well as Android devices. Better, stronger, faster. Streaming Disney music 24/7. App highlights include a new broadcast window that shows you what you're listening to and what's coming up next. Multitasking so you can listen to SR as well as perform other tasks on your iPhone.
Gorge!
Listener access to all of our daily shows. The new interface, a new buffered stream, auto reconnect when signal is lost, visual EQ, pause, rewind, and scrub features.
My goodness.
And the new SR info area. Get your virtual Disney World fix today with the new Sorcerer Radio app version 3.0 from Sorcerer Radio.
Be careful with that. It's extremely dangerous.
SRSounds.com.
Rebel Force Radio.
Your source for the Force.
Star Wars news and commentary.
With Jason Swank and Jimmy Mack.
I've seen Star Wars 500 times.
Weekly live shows and podcasts.
RFR.
Like Rebel Force Radio on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.
Rebel Force Radio.
Your new source for the Force.
Rebel Force Radio. With Jason Swank and Jimmy Mack. Saturdays at 7 p.m. Eastern on Sorcerer Radio. SRSounds.com.
Chip and Company is your daily Disney fix for Disney news, park planning, giveaways, and so much more. Visit our friends from Chip and Company at chipandco.com to get you up to date on all things Disney.
A magic beyond anything you could ever imagine.
Meet the Magic is a site where you can find Disney sites, blogs, and find new Disney friends. Learn how to save money or make your trip more magical.
Prepare to have your senses awakened.
Visit meetthemagic.com and follow her on Twitter at meetthemagic, a proud partner of Sorcerer Radio.
It's an adventure too magical to miss.
Woohoo! That was scary.
Dan Barnes here, inviting you to take a ride with me on an all-new edition of E-Ticket Time. I'll be playing the best ride-through audio from all your favorite Walt Disney World attractions. No fast pass required here. Just tune in Mondays at 1 p.m. Eastern, only on Sorcerer Radio at srsounds.com.
I am a Jedi. Like my father before me.
Are you a fan of Disney, Star Wars, and Marvel? Well, look no further than JediMouseketeer.com. On this geeky fan site, you'll find the latest news, videos, information on movies, comics, and more. Check out JediMouseketeer.com and follow him on Twitter at JediMouseketeer, a proud partner of Sorcerer Radio.
Remember, the Force will be with you, always.
Getting ready for your next visit to Walt Disney World? Well, why not check out Disney Trip Tips Fridays at 1 p.m. on Sorcerer Radio at srsounds.com with me, Sandy Alexander. Disney favorites from the parks, resorts, movies, and TV, and the tips that the family and I have used on our many visits to Walt Disney World. And if you have any tips or photos you'd like to share, you can post them at the Disney Trip Tips Facebook page. You can even follow me on Twitter at Disney Trip Tips. Disney Trip Tips on Sorcerer Radio. All Disney music all day long. SR Sounds.
And welcome back to Mighty Marvel Geeks on Sorcerer Radio. It's Mike, and we're joined with currently Marvel writer. Also writes for other books, other companies like Image and with his book Wayward. But he's also writing Figment, the Disney Kingdom's current 5-issue story arc. It's Jim Zub. So what other projects are you involved with Marvel? Has this led to other things, or?
Yeah, actually, I'm doing some other writing for Marvel, but nothing that's been announced yet. So
okay.
Bill Rogan's been a real champion of my work. We've been having a blast working together on the Figment series, and so he told me that he's been really, really happy with the work and showing it around to other editors and just in general kind of going to bat for me. So I know my name's come up on other projects and we're working on a couple different things, but nothing that's been announced yet. I'm okay. Happy to say that it looks like I'm going to be doing some Marvel superhero work in 2015, which, as a lifelong Marvel fan, that's an absolute thrill for me.
Okay, well, that, I guess we'll go a little backwards then, since we've hit what you're currently working on. What got you into comic book writing?
It's interesting, you can roll back and say, well, I've always been a comic reader and what may have you. But, my plan was to work in animation, and really that's my background. So I went to school for classical animation. I had hoped to get a job somewhere like Disney or Warner Brothers, when I graduated from school. And over the course of the years when I went to school, when I went in, it was like the animation industry was booming, and by the time I was heading out of school, the industry had imploded, and all of a sudden there were a lot less jobs. And so I went from sort of smaller studio, doing different work in different positions. I did some teaching at an art college out in Alberta, and then when I moved back to Toronto, originally to go back to school and sort of upgrade my skills in 3D animation, I ended up getting a job at the Udon Studio, working on illustration and design and comic book stuff. And so I've been a lifelong comic book fan, but I never actually thought I would get a chance to work in comics. And bit by bit, I sort of built up experience there. And through my own sort of, work on the side, learned a lot more about the craft and realized how much I'd missed from telling stories instead of just sort of doing, commercial illustration. And so by 2010, I launched my own comic series at Image called Skull Kickers, which is like a love letter to fantasy, sort of sword and sorcery craziness.
Wait, and that's a great series as well.
Say that again, sorry?
I said that was a great series as well. I loved it.
Thank you. Yeah, we're having a blast with it. And from there, really branching out and doing more and more writing over the last 3 to 4 years. And so it's sort of been something where one good project leads to another and leads to another, and building up trust with different publishers and different editors.
Okay. Who was your inspiration back in the day to get you into writing, be it animation or comics?
It was interesting. I grew up on a lot of fantasy and sort of sword and sorcery writing. So I love like Fritz Lieber's Fafnir the Grey Mouser, and obviously Conan and stuff like that. Yeah. But in terms of comic books, I was really into the artwork for a long time. I was reading the stories, but I wasn't keeping track of necessarily who's writing each thing. Like I knew, Chris Claremont was writing X-Men and stuff like that. But other than those kinds of obvious ones, I wasn't paying attention to writers as much as I was artists, until it came around by the time I hit high school and I was starting to read non-superhero stuff. Sandman was probably the first one that really jumped out to me as something completely different and poetic, and the writing was really in the front seat of that whole thing. And so Neil Gaiman, I'd say, was probably the first comic book writer that I started voraciously reading, all of his stuff, and getting a sense that, oh, this person's writing is distinctively different and carries a particular quality that I like above and beyond just the artwork.
Okay. Now, I thought, I might be wrong, I thought I read in your bio that you had done some work with Disney before, prior to Disney Kingdoms.
Yeah, through the Udon Studio, I worked with them on some development artwork and things for other departments, but it wasn't something, like, I was just part of a team of people working away on things.
Okay.
It's a very different process when you're one of a group of artists who are plugging away on a commercial project, as opposed to this where, you're coming up with, you're generating a story idea. It is it is an amazing process to be able to kind of come to the table and go, here's how I think we should approach this, you know, as a story, or this is what I think will make a good plot line. And so, although I've done some sort of small work here and there in and amongst other things, in some ways it kind of feels like my first Disney project. It's not, but you know what I mean? Like, it has a very different feel to it.
You're listening to Mighty Marvel Geeks with special guest Jim Zub, writer of Figment. We usually cover on the show our picks for the new comic book day for the upcoming week. And we love to have our guests give us books that are your must-haves for the month. What are your top three must-have books for them that you have to get each month?
Over like Marvel books in particular?
Sure.
I'm thoroughly enjoying Mark Waid's Daredevil series. The book is so consistently good and so on point. And the characters are rich, and the challenges that Matt Murdock's going up against always feel like there's something new and unexpected. I just think he's doing a stellar job with that series.
Okay.
He's really sharp. I absolutely love what Dan Slott's been doing with Spider-Man. The whole Superior Spider-Man plotline was an absolute blast. It was just so different and unexpected and kind of really rocked the boat on the core of Spider-Man's character. And then Peter's trying to pick up the pieces and return, you know, to his role as Spider-Man. I think that's just full of great potential. I think Dan's just a stellar writer across the board.
So you're liking the new direction with The Amazing Spider-Man with his return?
Yeah, I just like, you know, I've been reading Dan's stuff since Big Time when he took over on Amazing Spider-Man, and I just think that he's consistently delivered on that book, on all the potential of what Spider-Man is, and so I thoroughly enjoy it. And then, I mean, it's a real toss-up, you know, for me. I'm reading a bunch of Marvel stuff right now. I you know, I really did enjoy Scotty Young's Rocket Raccoon. I thought the first
that was awesome.
Animated and ridiculous, and it's got this irreverent feel to it, and I'm really looking forward to seeing where it goes. I could name off another, you know, half dozen Marvel books I'm enjoying, but those three come to mind right now. So
okay, so Daredevil, Spider-Man, and Rocket Raccoon.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Let me pitch then. Since you were on, I'm going to do three more, and these are going to be ones that come out for July 16th at your local brick and mortar store, or on the Marvel app, or Comicology, either or, for your digital needs. My first pick for the week is Magneto number 7, who is written by Colin Bunn.
Mm-hmm.
Magneto is and usually, you know, we get a little cheesy. We actually read the description from Marvel's website if they have one. Magneto is on a one-man mission to safeguard the future of mutant kind by any means necessary. So far, he's done so by eliminating human threats. But what happens when it's mutants who pose a threat to their own species? Will Magneto cross a line and raise his hand to his own kind? If so, just how far will he go? And to me, I think this was interesting because that almost takes him back to him being interned in the concentration camps. And does he see mutants as being the Jews as well, and would he turn on his own kind? So I think this is going to be an interesting twist, an interesting direction they're going to take with Magneto. Number two, I'm going with Elektra number 4, written by Hayden Blackman. After escaping the ruins of course I have to throw in a word I'm just struggling to pronounce, Shneg, Elektra corners the elusive Cape Crow at the edge of the world, where she must finally decide his fate. Will the deadliest assassin in the Marvel Universe defeat Cape Crow and collect the biggest bounty of her career, or help the hardened killer and his son escape the psychotic assassin Bloody Lips? And my last pick for the week is Savage Hulk number 2, written by Alan Davis. It's an all-new series by superstar Alan Davis. While Hulk and Abomination have the clash of the century, the X-Men do the Monster Mash, and Professor X plans to terminate the Hulk. So those are my three picks for the week.
Those are all super solid.
So, what's your take on the Magneto, based on the description?
I've been reading Magneto as well. Colin's a great writer. I really like his creator-owned series, The Sixth Gun, and so I've been following his stuff for quite a while. I think Magneto's a really great series. You get this character who's got this, you know, really difficult history as a villain, as an anti-hero, and now he's on this, and it's not even just a redemption kick, it's really this intense kind of story story where he is positioning himself that he's going to stand between, you know, human and threats and mutant kind. But it's so many gray areas driven to all these difficult decisions. And I think that that's really compelling stuff.
Okay. Now, what's been your take with the Marvel Cinematic Universe? How have you liked where the direction they're going with it?
I think it's great. I mean, I'm really, really impressed with the way that they've been able to build up the characters and modernize them while staying true to the core of where they came from. I thoroughly enjoy the films. I think that they strike the right balance between that kind of joyous, sort of fun adventure, but they've got enough, you know, character depth and emotional material that they're not just, you know, completely shallow by any means. I think that they've really been on target, and the vast majority of them I really enjoyed. You know, my wife and I went and saw Captain America 2, and we were blown away by how solid it was, taking a lot of different threads from different storylines and making it really coherent there up on the screen.
Right. Who's been an inspiration or mentor now that's helped you with your writing or even your artwork?
You know, it's really interesting because I've got a whole sort of circle of friends now that I've met in the business, and we all kind of bounce things off of each other. So we'll send each other, you know, review versions of books ahead of time, or sometimes script and pitches ideas to sort of get back. Carl Soule, who's at Marvel doing the Death of Wolverine storyline coming up, and he's doing the Inhumanity book. He's a dear friend, and I've known him as he's been moving up sort of through the ranks with his original creator-owned material and now doing work for both DC and Marvel. So he's been a close ally and friend. I think we are able to be really kind of straightforward with each other about, you know, what we're working on and how to, you know, critiquing each other as we go along. Ray Fox, who's mostly known for his DC work now, but he's starting to do some Marvel work as well. He was an old friend from college who I lost touch with, and then we sort of reconnected through comics. So that's been kind of a nice, fun little... Yeah, so those two jump out immediately, you know, off the top of my head. There's other guys like Fred Van Lente, who's been really supportive and awesome. Ron Mars, who, you know, I read his stuff when I was going through school, and now we've become friends. It's kind of surreal and awesome, and he's been very supportive as well.
So have you had a chance to meet that one person that you would consider like a holy grail or the idol of idols?
You know, it's weird. I met Neil Gaiman, I guess this would have been back in like 2003, 2004, maybe. And it was kind of I had a bit of a, you know, celebrity kind of wig out about it. It was a little bit nerve wracking for me at the time. But for the most part, everyone in this business is really very nice, and they're kind of down to earth. So, you know, I think people have this idea that some of these people are larger than life, but especially, you know, you're not talking even about Hollywood actors or something like that. These are people who, outside of a convention environment, the vast majority of people wouldn't even recognize them. So they're pretty never, you know, like I met Jim Starlin last year, and he was super easygoing, and a bunch of us ended up going out and grabbing breakfast and having good conversation, you know, whether it's like Brian Michael Bendis or you know, I'm just sort of rolling through my head here, different people. But, you know, Gail Simone has been very supportive, and she's a wonderful person.
She's awesome. She's awesome.
Yeah, I really love her work, and she's been, you know, just been great. Just Matt Fraction or Robert Kirkman, all these people, they're all really, really nice, down-to-earth, easy-going people. So I don't really get starstruck. Like I said, I had a bit of a weird out when I met Neil Gaiman for the first time, but for the most part, people working in this business are, they're pretty down-to-earth.
Yeah, I'm the same way. You know, being in the entertainment business, you know, I've seen lots of people come through, you know, at Disney, and because, you know, everyone comes through Disney. And but it wasn't until I was working with the Atlanta Braves during spring training, because they spring train down here in Orlando at Disney's now ESPN's Wide World of Sports Complex. And Bobby Cox, who I'm a big Blue Jays fan, and he was one of our managers for the Blue Jays. I say one of our managers. He was one of the managers for the Blue Jays. He's the only person I've ever head dropped and like, hi, head dropped, and it's like, couldn't make eye contact for whatever reason. It's... You know, I've gone up to Wayne Gretzky. I've gone up to David Ogden Stiers, you name it. I've gone up to everyone. Him, for whatever reason, I could not look him in the face and get a formal sentence out to save my life. So I totally understand where you came from, with your meeting. What would you say to those up and coming, that want to get into the business? What advice do you have for them?
It's funny you mention that actually on my blog. So I've got a website, really simple to remember, just www.jimzub.com. So JIMZUB.com. I've got a bunch of tutorials talking about how I break into the business, how to format your ideas for scripts and pitches, how to look for artists and collaborators. A lot of that stuff I cover there. And, you know, I think people get the idea that because this is a creative business or because there's an artistic aspect to it, that the muses have to kiss your fingertips, or that you have to be, use this word with like hanging air quotes, talented, you know, right from the get-go. But it is a lot like any other sort of occupation where you can learn it, where you can build your skills and grow. And the only way to do that is to get better at it. You know, if you were going to go into baseball or something like that, you would go through minor leagues and then, you know, AA and AAA and all those different levels before, and not everyone gets to go to the major leagues, but all along that process, you're building up your skills and you're understanding more about the craft of what you're doing. In that case, it's a sport, but in this case, storytelling and art. And so I think people get the idea that they need to spontaneously have the skill, or that they will instantly figure this stuff out, or they're not meant to do it because it's art and because it's activity. But the reality is that you can improve yourself, and the only way to get better is to be, you know, to analyze your own work and to be critical and to build up your skills bit by bit.
Okay. Well, we thank you for coming on and joining us on this week's issue of Mighty Marvel Geeks. We've been talking with Jim Zub. Any final words that you have for our listeners?
Well, if people want to get in touch with me or let me know what they think of my work, whether that's Figment or any of the other stuff I'm doing, the easiest way is probably on Twitter. Like everyone else in comics is on Twitter, it feels like.
Yep.
You can find me at JIMZUB, so Jim Zub on Twitter. Say hi. Let me know what you thought of the interview here, and I hope you're enjoying Figment.
Again, support Jim. Go out if you haven't already. Get the Figment series. Make sure it's on your subscription, because I'm personally expecting to see the announcement soon that even issue 3 is going to go second printing weeks before it's even been put on the shelves.
We can
hope. This is an amazing series. We thank you for coming on. Again, follow Jim at his website or his blog at jimzub.com. J-I-M. Tells you where my mind is today. J-I-M-Z-U-B.com or on Twitter at J-I-M-Z-U-B.
My absolute pleasure.
So again, we thank Jim for coming on the show. Marvel TV comes to San Diego Comic-Con. Just one quick story before we go. Wondering what Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. have been up to all summer? Well, to prepare for its fall return at the new time of 9 p.m. Eastern on Tuesday nights, Comic-Con International will be hosting a panel with all your favorite agents to talk about Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Marvel's Agent Carter. On Friday, July 25th, prepare yourselves for the Marvel Television Presents panel, moderated by Jeff Lieb, Marvel's head of television. They're promising to be some exciting and fun surprises and exciting news. Join Jeff and executive producers Jed Whedon, Marisa Tancrione, and Jeffrey Bell, along with cast members Clark Gregg, Ming-Na Wen, Brett Dalton, Chloe Bennett, Ian DeCastecker, and Elizabeth Henstridge. Plus learn more about the mid-season series, Marvel's Agent Carter, along with executive producers Tara Butters, Michelle Frazikas, Christopher Marcus, Stephen McFeely, and Louis D'Esposito, and series star Haley Atwell. In this can't-miss Q&A panel. They're going to take you behind the scenes and into the future of Marvel's live-action TV series. Now, that's going to be at Ballroom 20 between 3 and 4 p.m. on Friday, July 25th. And also, there's going to be a autograph session for Marvel's Agent Carter preceding the panel at the Marvel booth number 2329 on the convention floor from 1 to 2 as well. Plus, on Saturday, meet the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. cast and executive producers for an autograph session between 10 and 11 at the Marvel booth. Again, that's booth number 2329. So don't forget to check out Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. at its new time at 9 p.m. on Eastern Time on Tuesday nights this fall. So we can find out who you could trust, who you can't, and more on what's just going on with Director Coulson. So if you can't make it to San Diego Comic-Con, go to Marvel and sign up for the live blog of the panel, and just catch it as all the news breaks. And until next week, we say thank you, and thanks for being part of Geek Out Saturday Nights.
This has been a Weeby Geeks production.